Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk podcast. We help you build a thriving creative practice. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza! You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's get into today's episode. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. If your next season is looking busier than the last, take something off your plate by putting Factor Meals onto your plate. Eliminating extra decisions can free up brain power for other things like self-care and creativity, and Factor Meals makes eating well streamlined with always fresh, never frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready in just 2 minutes. They have a weekly menu of over 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go, lunches, snacks, and beverages. I like their little vitamin-y shots. They're tasty. I like the spicy one. Head to factormeals.com/peptalk50 and use code peptalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code peptalk50 at factormeals.com/peptalk50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Hey y'all, this episode is hot, fresh, and piping right out of the wood-burning pizza oven. I don't know what that means, but I am so freaking pumped for this episode. I had a chat with my co-collaborator for my new picture book, Kyle Sheely, and, you know, we've been talking about this episode for a long time because we made this picture book together, A Pizza With Everything on It, and it's been years in the making. And because both of us do a lot of public speaking for a living, we're always kind of thinking about what we're learning in real time. And it was such a different creative project for both of us that we learned a ton of huge things that I've carried on into all the stuff I've been making after it. This book is a real creative achievement for me and for Kyle, and this episode is packed full. It's not a regular interview episode. We actually did a lot of planning and talking and developed some content for this, so I think you are going to get a lot of juicy secret sauce, if you will, which you will. So I hope you love it. Don't forget, please go pre-order the book now at creativepeptalk.com/pizza. There's links there, or get it where you get your books. So appreciate all your help. Hope you freaking love this episode, How the Pizza Gets Made, 6 Secret Ingredients to a Breakthrough Creative Project. Here is my friend, my collaborator, Kyle Sheely. Here we go. So, hi, Kyle.
What's up, Andy?
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. I mean, I kind of invited myself 2 years ago.
Well, that's true.
When we sold this book together.
Yeah. So, we decided we were going to do an episode telling you not just about the kids' book that we have coming out in just a week and a half?
A week and a day.
A week and a day.
Actually, when this comes out, it'll be less than a week.
Oh my gosh.
If this comes out on Wednesday, it'll be 6 days.
So we decided to do an episode, not just to be like, hey, let me tell you about this cool book, but this has been an enormous journey. A lot of people don't know how long it takes to make a book and get it out in the world. It's this enormous journey. And through all of that,
1,000 years.
Thousands of years we've been working on this pizza. But throughout that time, I feel like anytime you take on a project of this magnitude, you just learn a ton of stuff that you didn't know going into it. And we decided we're constantly talking about all the things we've learned by making this picture book, A Pizza With Everything On It, that we decided, we're like, dude, we should definitely make an episode out of this stuff. So we're going to do an episode and tell you how the pizza gets made, 6 tips that will help you in your creative practice. So that's what we're doing here. Is that about right?
Yeah. I mean, I think we just kind of wanted to share like the stuff that, at least from my perspective, like this is all the stuff I wish somebody would have told me. Like I had no idea. And we'll probably get into the backstory a little bit, but like I wanted to write kids' books 10 years ago and I gave up on it because all the information that I saw out there was so discouraging and just said, oh, it's so hard and you'll never get an agent. You'll never get a book deal. And like, there was nobody out there saying like, yeah, it is hard, but here's what I did and here's my experience. And so, you know, when we ended up getting this book deal, like everything came together completely the opposite of what I expected it to and what everyone had sort of like all the like doomsday voices had said. And so this episode is kind of us just saying like, hey, you know what? Like every creative journey is going to be different, but hey, let's tell you about ours so that you aren't exclusively hearing people telling you this is never going to work and it's going to be a terrible idea and you know you're going to be poor the whole rest of your life and you'll never get a deal.
Yeah, and actually we went about doing it in some ways the opposite of what the experts say. And this episode is not about how to publish a kid's book, but it is about how what are all the ingredients, if you will, to getting your practice off the ground, getting that project that you want to realize into reality, piping hot, delicious. That's what this is about, because we ran into a bunch of hurdles, and I feel like this project more than most taught me some big things that I know I'm going to care, that I've already started exercising all of these ideas in the future projects that I've been making. So let's go. We both brought some lessons to the table. I'll kick us off with the dough, the base. You got to start with a good base for your creative pie. And I'll tell you what this is really about for me. I feel like in the creative world, there's a lot of people on looking creativity, experts on creativity, talking about it's all about skill. It's all about craft. It's all about the 10,000 hours, which all that stuff is important. I do think technique and skill is a part of the creative process. But for me, I feel like philosophy, approaching it with the right philosophy, with the right recipe, is just as important as technical ability. You know, we joke a lot that, you know, I'm not the best at drawing in the world. I wasn't even the best at drawing in my art class in high school. And yet, none of those people have a picture book out. And maybe they would if they wanted to. But for me, one of the things that this book taught me was that a lot of people think illustration is about drawing, which is the skill. A lot of people use illustration as being synonymous with the term drawing. But why do we have two different words? And I really think that it's because illustration isn't drawing, it's writing with pictures. And you tell them a little bit about the story of the book so I can kind of explain, or just the text as you had it before I started diving into the illustration, so I can explain how I started to figure out my philosophy on kids' books and how that changed the drawing side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the story, like the story is, it's a very ridiculous, very silly story, which is about a kid and his father who set out to make a pizza. And the dad owns a pizza restaurant. And so he tells his kid, you can make a pizza any way that you want. What do you want? And the kid says, I want a pizza with everything on it. And the kid takes that hyper literally and just He wants everything on the pizza, not just standard pizza toppings, but that's how the book starts. The dad puts on standard stuff, you know, sausage and tomato and sausage and peppers and pepperoni and you know, mushrooms and stuff. And then he goes, great, we did it. We made a pizza with everything on it. And the kid's like, no, I want a pizza with everything on it. So then it goes pickles and a whole turkey and an ice cream cone and, you know, just keeps escalating, keeps getting crazier and crazier. And then eventually this disaster happens where so many things are put on the pizza that it collapses under its own weight. It forms a pizza black hole. It sucks in everything from the entire universe. And then what happens after that? You have to buy the book to figure it out. But that's the basic premise of the story, is just this escalating absurdity of this kid's desire to have an actual pizza with everything on it.
Yeah. And one thing that is interesting, as I started making thumbnails for the book and we pitched it and we were working with the editor on how we were telling this story visually, one thing that became really apparent was there was one way to tell this story with the pictures that equaled the kid being kind of a spoiled brat, being like, I want everything. No, I want more, more, more. And there was one way of drawing that text that told a totally different story. And what I realized was in this moment that I'm not just drawing what's in the text. I'm having to come up with my own side of the story and write stuff with these pictures. And we realized there was this key moment for me. There's a page in the book where the dad is doing a chef's kiss to the son dumping his backpack onto the pizza. And there was something about the dad buying into the craziness and the silliness that all of a sudden it didn't look like the kid was demanding things. It looked like they were playing. And it just totally changed the tone of the story and that relationship. And the reason I bring that up, the takeaway, was that the philosophy here actually was more important than the ability to draw. Yes, the ability is drawing, but the philosophy and understanding why are there pictures? Not what are you adding not the actual what, but the why. And it got me thinking about if I said, you know, when you're making dough for a pizza, what's it all about? The first things you're going to think of are skills. You're going to think of like tossing it in the air, doing the big circle thing, or kneading the dough. You're thinking about all these skills, but those are things that you can literally teach anyone. Anyone can go work at the local pizza shop and be taught those hard skills. But there was a, back in my hometown, there's a local pizza shop that everyone's obsessed with. And why are they obsessed with it? Because the dough is amazing. And it's not all those skills that make it amazing. Anybody can do that. It's because they bought a recipe from this like person that had this tiny shop, and it was the perfect recipe for this amazing, fluffy, chewy dough. And that recipe is the key to their pizza. And that recipe is all the ideas, it's all the ingredients, it's getting everything right in terms of the philosophy of what makes a good dough, not just the skills. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that like one thing that I want to say as the author is that like that's a thing that only you can do. Like, and I didn't realize that until I wrote this story and then I sent it out to a few of my friends just as text. And most of them came back and said, oh, I love it, I love it, I love it. And one of my friends wrote back and he said, I love it and I understand what you're trying to do, but there is a way that you could read this as this is a bratty kid. And he said to me, he's a creative guy, he's a Disney Imagineer, like he knows his way around the creative world. And he said, that has to be expressed in the illustration, that this kid is not a brat, he's a kid who's having fun with his dad, and his dad is sort of like allowing it and encouraging it and yes-anding it. But that's not a thing that I could express in the text unless I am just like over-the-top explanatory and go, but he was actually a nice kid, you know, which takes you out of the story. And so, you know, what you were doing is adding a thing that only you could do.
Which negates it being a picture book. Like for a picture book to be successful, they both have to justify their presence. They both have to be necessary to tell the story. And it's just that was a big deal to me to realize, like, you know, what is the why behind why we're having pictures? Not just because it's nice, not just because it's a picture book and that's what's in a picture book. why is it important and what are you trying to achieve? And so first thing is, I just feel, the reason I harp on about this, I guess, is because I don't feel like a lot of people move past the surface level skill into where it's under the surface where all the good stuff is. That gets deeper into the philosophy. All right, so that's number one. That's the dough. Number two.
Once you have the dough, number two is the sauce. So once you've got your dough, you slather on that sauce and that's
start
that's
swimming
where I come
in
it,
secret slathering
sauce.
In it.
Just taking a bath in that sweet tomato sauce, yeah. Like you got sprayed by a skunk. Isn't it tomato sauce?
That's what it smells
you use
like.
When you
yeah.
get skunked. You don't want to reuse that for the pizza though. Then that's gross.
That's a good tip.
So
thanks, Kyle.
What this point is about, it's about bringing your secret sauce to a project. What is it that makes you special? And see, my backstory is I've tried to write a ton of different stories. And even since selling this book, I've written other stories. And some of them have worked and some of them have not worked. And as I looked at this, I realized like, oh, the thing that works about this particular story is that it is just this pure expression of who I am. Not that that makes it good. It just makes it me. And then the people who identify with a story that is super duper me are going to latch onto this story. The thing that makes this story so me is that I have always been a kid who liked wordplay and then who liked hyperliteralism. My friend Scott calls me a hyperliteralist. He says that I take everything super duper literally, and I do. And even though I understand what someone means when they say a pizza with everything on it, and I can contextualize that and go, oh, what they really mean is a supreme pizza. Like my brain, the first place it still goes is, what would it be like to have a pizza with every single thing on it? And this was the first story where I really leaned into that idea. And like, not just, oh, like, let's let that play out a little bit and it'll be kind of funny. Like, really taking that to the extreme. And before this, I had tried to write like other people. I would see an author that I liked and I would be like, I should try to write a story that's like that. But all that is going to be is my bad interpretation or imitation of this other person. And what this story is it's me leaning into this just sort of like maximalism and extreme, taking this idea way, way farther than a reasonable person would take it. And the thing about this, when you think about pizza sauce, like the more you try to make your sauce like standard pizza sauce, the less notable it is at all. You know, famous like pizza chains are not known for their like amazing sauce, like cheap pizza chains. That's why Andy's small town place is amazing, because they've got this dough that stands out. They probably have an amazing sauce. Yeah. And what that is going to mean is that there will be people who don't like that. Some people want a saltier sauce. Some people want a tangier sauce. Some people want some crazy thing. But by trying to please all of those people, you end up pleasing none of them. You're not taking a stance at all. And that's taken me a long time to accept as like a chronic people pleaser. I want everyone in the world to like my stuff. But what I've realized is like, I really only want the people who really like this kind of thing to like it. There are certain people who will hear me talk about this story, and you may be listening to this, and that's fine, who may hear this and go like, that sounds like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I've had to come to realize like, well, there's nothing that I can create that person is going to really enjoy and I am going to really enjoy. The Venn diagram circles are just too far apart. And so what I have to do is lean into like, instead of trying to please that person, I should go, how do I even more please the person who already loves this idea? And for me, that was ratcheting this up and taking it even further. And the idea of a pizza that destroys the universe, that is a thing that 8-year-old Kyle would have been so excited about. And so I leaned into that, into embracing the secret sauce that makes me who I am.
Yeah. And one of the things that makes me think of is one of the things you hear in marketing circles all the time is defining your target market and making stuff for people that you really want to make stuff for. And I was struck by this idea that if you play your cards right, like you really want to make stuff for people. Like if you gathered them in a big room and they were all there, who would you want to be in that room? Because the end goal is to one day be in a room with them. Almost every single creative journey ends, if it's successful, with people gathering around. You know what I mean? Whether you're going to do a show, or we're going to do a book reading, or you're going to do the premiere of a movie, like, think about who you want in that room and then disregard everybody else that you don't. You don't want anybody that hates this book. I don't want them to have it. I don't want you to read it. Like, if you hate this book, you don't like
it. I do want you to buy it.
Of course, buy it and then burn it. Use it for kindling. We don't care. Definitely buy it, though. No, for you and I, our sensibility, it's so funny because I don't even think I had put together how maximal both of our sensibility. I knew that we both had that maximal sensibility, but I hadn't really put it together that there was a clear Venn diagram in that. Because for me, what ends up happening is you focus all on what you're not when you're focusing on your insecurities. And you're trying to be like your heroes, like you said. And there was a long period of time in my career where I was trying to be this slick, minimal, conceptual designer, because that is everything that I was self-conscious about not being. And because someone said to me, like, I hire you when I want you to fill up, when I need an artist to fill a page because you don't know how to do white space properly or negative space. And the funny thing is, this book, what's great about it is wall-to-wall insanity and toppings and maximal, like all these Easter eggs. And that comes from leaning into what we are.
Well, and I think that the other thing that makes me think of is, like, you know, you're saying keep attracting the people who you want in that room. But I think there's also a point of, like, intentionally pushing away the people who aren't going to enjoy being in that room. And I think that, you know, I've had projects in the past where someone would ask me, like, why did you do this thing? And, you know, there's this, I actually have a newspaper in my desk right now there's this house that I drive by that's these two artists that live in it. And the newspaper locally did a story about it, and they've been the house looks like this crazy theme park castle. Yeah. Like, they're constantly building onto it. They have two giant lions in their driveway, like concrete lions. And in the article, they were talking about, like, why do they have a tower? They have a tower in their home. And the guy said, if you have to ask why you need a tower, you probably don't need a tower. Like, he was saying, like, you're probably, like, there's nothing that he's ever going to be able to say to a person who doesn't get why you need a tower that would ever make them go, like, oh, okay, this is a reasonable reason for a person to have a tower. Like, there isn't one. The reason is I wanted a tower at my house, and it's my house, and so I could do what I want. And I think for us, like, us saying, hey, you know what, we're actually going to lean into the craziness of this so that somebody who buys a children's book, like, to, you know, preach some moral or something, like, they're gonna not like it, because our book intentionally does not do that. And people who buy kids' books for specific reasons, you know, outside of that, like, or who like really nice stories that have this tidy little ending, and, like, they're not gonna like our book, and that's okay. We want it's not just about filling that room, wherever that room ends up being. It's also about, once that room is full, everyone in that room enjoying themselves. And so sometimes you have to go, hey, this is what it's about. And so if it's not for you, then that's fine. But it is for us, and we would rather have these people. And that's something that's been hard for me to accept. Like, not to get too deep into the weeds, but I recently had this experience, Andy, you know this, that I accidentally went viral on TikTok and went from 17 followers to 1 million followers in 25 hours. And now I have 2 million followers on this platform. Yeah. And I've had to fight against, like, this urge of, like, oh, I have to keep these people appeased. And our mutual friend, Brandon Harvey, was talking to me the other day, and he was like, actually, what you should do is just keep putting out content that's only true and authentic to you. And then if your following shrinks, then that's fine, because it's going to shrink to the size of, like, all your true fans. And it doesn't really matter if that ends up being 2 million people or 2,000 people. Like, you blew up huge. Like, let it come to the two options are, either you let it condense back to true fans, or you keep trying to entertain these people who, like, you don't really have anything in common with, and they just happen to like this one particular video of yours.
Yeah, and I've been in the comments of some of your posts after this happened, and there are people there where you're like, there's people there, you're like, this person's awesome. Keep making stuff for these people. These are great humans that get it. They get the joke. They're here for the right reason. And then there's other people who are like, would this person leave the party? Goodness gracious, this is not for you. I don't know how you got this invite, but this is not your party, man. And I think, it's really hard to get to a place where you're willing to alienate people, but I think it's really essential. There's a real breakthrough moment. Okay, number three, I think this comes from your side.
Yep, that's the topping. So we've got the dough, we've got the sauce, and then next up is the toppings. And so, you know, it's not enough to just have the dough, the philosophy of why you want to do it. There are a lot of artists that get stuck there, and all they ever want to do is talk about art and talk about their philosophy. They never make anything. And it's not even enough to know what your secret sauce is, because a pizza that is just crust and sauce is not particularly good. You've got to add something to it. And for us, that was, you know, the things that make the pizza stand out. Like the toppings are what you refer to as a pizza as. You say, I want a pepperoni pizza. You don't say, I want a pepperoni and sauce and crust pizza. Those things are implied. And so the thing that makes a pizza what it is are the toppings. And it's the things that make it stand out. And so what we try to do with this book is add layers of flavor that would keep people coming back. Add layers to this idea. And so that started with the pitch. Like, we wanted to go the extra mile in a pitch. Andy had a book agent at this point. I did not. I had no connection to the publishing industry. I didn't have an agent. I had never published a book. I had friends who had agents, but like, I didn't have anything. So we were going in with like, we're going to pitch this together, which is something when you don't typically do as an author and illustrator, especially an unknown author. And so we knew that we were gonna have to overcome that. So we decided, hey, we're not just gonna send in a pitch that says, here's our story, take it or leave it. We're like, let's layer this pitch so that by the time it gets to the end, the right publisher will be just like mouth-watering, chomping at the bit. And so we didn't just say, here's our story, take it or leave it. We said, here's our story. Here's what we think is good about this. And we made a chart of like, here's what kids will like about this. Here's what adults will like about this. Here's what everyone will love about this. And in that, it wasn't just even a list like I'm talking about in a Word document. It was a beautifully like drawn presentation pitch deck where there were pepperonis and mushrooms all over the background of this pitch to like set the tone of what we were talking about. And then we didn't even just say, here's our story and here's what we think people will like about it. Then we said, here's how we will get them to like it. Here's what we will do to market this book. This podcast that you're listening to right now was in the pitch deck 2 years ago that we said, hey, and when we put this book out, we will do a podcast talking about it, because Andy's audience is all creative people, and creative people love to hear about how their creative work gets made, and creative people love to hear about children's books because most of you want to make a children's book at some point, or a huge percentage of you do. And so this was all in the pitch deck 2 years ago. And then in addition to all of that, it was, here's where we think it fits into the market. Here are books that we think are like this. And we went layer upon layer upon layer. And our pitch was, it was the menu that they were looking at to say, oh, this pizza looks pretty good. Like that, this sounds pretty good. And then once we got the book deal, we layered stuff into the book to fulfill that promise, and to do the same thing for readers that we did for the publisher initially. We layered in jokes, we layered in little Easter eggs. There's so much visually in this book that Andy put in there on his own. And then there's stuff that we even talked about. Like, there's this whole reference to pineapple on pizza that Andy and I talked about before the book was ever drawn, before anything was in there conceptually. We said, oh, it'd be funny to put a joke about pineapple and pizza in the book. Another, probably my favorite layer, because I'm an author, is I got the publisher to change the copyright notice in the back of the book.
Yes.
And this is a thing I didn't think publishers would let you do. And because it's like a legally binding, you know, you're telling people, hey, if you don't do these things, if you do these things, we will sue you. But I emailed the publisher and I was like, hey, I had this idea to change the copyright notice. What do you think about this? And they were like, well, what do you want to change it to? And I told them, and they were like, well, let us email our lawyers. And the lawyers basically came back and said, like, sure, we don't care, that's fine. So like the copyright notice in the back of this book, which this is like the ultimate Easter egg, because who's going to read this? Only somebody who really loves the book and is just like flipping through it more. The copyright says, all rights reserved. No part of this book may be reproduced in any form, baked into a pizza, or used to destroy and or recreate the universe without written permission from the publisher. And that's a thing that like some people will hate that. Some people will be like, oh, you can't mess with the sacred copyright notice. And other people, our people, will read that and be like, that's hilarious. I love this book even more. And so what we tried to do is just add so many layers, so many toppings that would appeal to the kind of pizza who would love the kind of people who would love our pizza.
Yeah, man. I love this. And I just want to add to this that there's two things as we're going through this that strike me. One is we're really talking about the journey from start to finish of getting a creative project to be as good as you possibly are capable of. And I wish that, you know, we're telling all these things. I feel like we're saying them through the lens of passion. And that could be read as like, we know these things and we're experts on this. But the passion I know for you and I come from the fact that I wish this was a thing we could put in a time capsule and send back in time to previous me, because there's so many parts of this pizza baking creative process that I just completely missed so many times. This is not my first book. This is my eighth book. That most of the stuff we're talking about in this process, I did not do with the other books. Now, I'm proud of those books, but yeah. I wish I would have had all of these creative ingredients. The one that we're talking about right now, it's interesting because we started with the philosophy, which is the depth of the project, but we're moving towards the surface. And there are times where, just like you said, lots of creatives, once the depth of the concept is had, you're just not interested in putting on the toppings and making sure that it looks gorgeous and looks appealing. So this idea of putting all these Easter egg toppings, which I like the idea of Easter eggs as a pizza topping, what it really makes me think of going the extra mile to make it accessible and look tasty from afar, like as a gateway, kind of like sugar for the medicine. For this book, I really believe, like, on a deep layer, there's deep layers to this book that I'm really passionate about, like we were talking about with the philosophy of the storytelling and the relationship between the father and son. And then even just your expert storytelling, you're such a natural storyteller. There's a really satisfying ending that you don't always get in picture books. So it has all this depth, and we know that. And we could have just been like, look, take it or leave it. If you read it, you're going to know it's cool, but you know, whatever. We're not going to sell it to you, but because we believe in those things so much, we're going to take the time to put in all these added toppings. And it's just like a pizza chain. Like, you know, a lot of times a new pizza place will get you to come in because you're like, look at our wacky toppings, but that's not going to become your favorite pizza joint if the crust isn't remarkable and the sauce isn't something to, you know, write home about. But the toppings get you through the door often because you're like, look at the crazy, they're hot chicken, Nashville chicken on the pizza with pickles. And you're like, all right, I'll try it. That's what this layer is about. You know, when you hear these weird things about the copywriter or the role that the pineapple plays, which is totally secret, you have to look for it. That's the enticing stuff that gets people through the door. And I, in the past, I'd be so caught up on the deep stuff and what I feel like, oh, this is what makes it good as the artist, because that I would just neglect really delighting people and adding the frills and taking the time to do that idea justice.
Yeah, and I think you have to do both of those things. Like you've got to have the guy who's out front dressed up as a, you know, as a pizza who's spinning a sign in the street to get people to come in. And then you also have to have the pizza be really good when you get in there. And I think it seems like in art and in pizza places, the more I think about it, like places tend to like be good at one of those things or the other. Like, like ideally you need both of those things. Like there's a reason, it's so funny. There's a gas station in my town that it's this old gas station. They don't have like stuff that you can buy in the store. It's like a service station. They only have gas and like there's a mechanic shop. Well, this brand new amazing like come and go service station is going in next door. They have pizza, they have donuts. It's like amazing. They've got great food, all this stuff. And they, like, the newspaper interviewed this guy who runs the other one right next to it. And he was like, well, I don't care if, you know, people don't want foo-foo pizza and candy and stuff when they get gasoline. Like, I'm serving these other customers. And And the top comment on the article was somebody saying like, oh yeah, ignoring the things that a customer wants. That's a great business strategy. Like, we'll see how it pays off for them. But yet that's how so many, like, there are a lot of pizza places where you're like, oh, why haven't I ever heard of this? Oh, because they don't do advertising. They don't have a social media presence. They don't do any of that. They just expect the pizza to speak for itself. And there's like a cult following, but a cult following, like the story of most of those places is, yeah, it runs for one generation and then it peters out because there's not enough like business in it to keep going. And so I think we tried to do both of those things, to make this amazing pizza book that rewards the payoff. The payoff is there. Like, it rewards you for reading it. It is as good as you want it to be. But then also, we're going to tell you about it. We're going to do a podcast about it. I'm doing a million TikTok videos this week explicitly saying, like, please buy this book. Like, I poured my heart into this. I want you to buy it. And so, So we've talked about the crust, we've talked about the sauce, we've talked about the toppings, and then number four tip is baking the pie. You have to bake the pizza. The problem with creative work, especially for people like Andy and I, who both have ADHD, him officially, me unofficially, but I think having talked to Andy enough, I feel like pretty confident in saying that. And I think a lot of you, whether you have that diagnosis or just a generally creative person, the problem that a lot of creative people run into is that the most exciting thing for a creative person is often the idea. It's the upfront thing. Somebody asked me one time, like, what's your favorite creative project that you've ever done? And I said, it's always whatever the last one was. Like, the last thing that I did is always like the thing I'm the most excited about. Austin Kleon talks about, he says execution is execution. Like, once you execute a project, once you finish it, it's like it's dead to you. It's like you executed it like a person. And that's like something that you have to wrestle with as a creative and know about yourself, and know that like the idea is fun and it's sexy and it's cool, and that's the thing that like gets you excited. But you have to be willing to put in the work after the excitement of that idea fades. I was looking it up right before we got on this call, and I had the idea for this book in 2015. That was the first time I had the idea. I had about half of the idea down. I couldn't figure out the ending. And then Andy and I started talking about the book in 2017. That's when I like wrote the first draft of the story. It is now 2021 and the book is just now coming out. And if we had hoped that the initial excitement would sustain me for 6 years and then us for 4 years, it just wouldn't happen. And so once we sold this book to Chronicle, then there were still 2 years of work from that point. Like, we sold the book in 2019. So Andy and I worked on it together for 2 years in the background. It was not a full-time process. Anytime you hear somebody go like, oh, this book is 10 years in the making, it's 10 years of part-time in between other stuff, because Andy and I have jobs and have lives and we're not getting paid for this at this point. But it was 2 years of development on our end, making the pitch, getting it ready, finalizing, polishing the idea. Then we sold it to Chronicle, and then there's 2 years from that point to now, and where Andy has to draw all of the pictures like in final art. And Chronicle bought essentially a comic book from us that was loosely rendered thumbnails and some text, and then Andy has to turn that into a beautiful book, and then we have to spend 2 years like talking about marketing and having all these Zoom calls and meetings with the publisher and doing these panels that we definitely don't belong on and all of these things to get the word out there. And that's the part of the process where you're actually like baking the pizza, where you're actually making it. And if you can't commit to that, like, don't be surprised when your creative work is just not doing what you want it to do. Like, you see this all the time. It's a plague. And Andy and I have both been guilty of this, of starting, never finishing anything. And then going, why am I not successful? Why do I not have a career that's taking out? It's because you never finished the thing that you said you were going to do. There's something to be said for just making a list of all the stuff that you have on the back burner and saying, I'm not starting a new project until I finish this and this and this and this. And then executing those things. That clears up space to make new ideas, but you have to get something into the oven at some point.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think One thing that's really becoming clear to me is my own kind of failures and struggles to complete this process all the way through, and what has stopped me in the past. And the funny thing is, although I think everybody has their preferences of like, they're either a good starter or they're a good finisher, or they're really about, you know, the deep stuff, or they like putting the toppings on, like whatever it is, everything in between, I feel like it's easy to fall off on either side. And it speaks to why each point is important. Because for me, the reason why we're doing this podcast right now, the reason why we're spending this entire month promoting this thing, I've had lots of other books that I'm really passionate about. I've had a bunch of projects that I really love, but I've never spent so much time doing the baking and the delivery and all these other parts. And it's because the deep stuff was, we did the work then. I still believe in it. There were other times, there's plenty of other times with the project either where I get a really good idea, but then I don't take the time to really, you know, dress it with everything that it needs to have to finish well. But there's also other times where I just want to race to the finish line. I just want to be a published kids book illustrator, or I just want to do this or that. And I rush the philosophy, I rush the idea, I go straight to the sales. And so that kind of speaks to why all these pieces working in tandem make so much sense. You know, one of the things they talk about in storytelling is if there's a problem with the third act, it's really a problem with the first act, because there's stuff you didn't set up, there's problems you didn't solve. And if there's a problem with promoting the book or going the extra mile to really bake this thing properly, sometimes it's because you knew you made a crappy pizza. So you're like, I don't even, you know, who cares? You know what I mean? But with some, and I think, it just speaks to every part of that process. What are we trying to say? I think we're trying to say there's too many Papa Murphys out there. Do you know, did you have that? The take and bake pizzas?
Yeah.
There's too many Lunchables out there, uncooked raw pizza crackers. And everyone wants, you know, there were so many times where I wanted to point to like, but Papa Murphy doesn't bake it. He just starts and doesn't finish. Like, why are they the exception to the rule? They're the exception. Quit trying to be another Papa Murphy's. We don't need any more of those. Bake your damn pizza. All right. I'm sorry.
I always, side note, I had a business idea to just start basically a laundromat, but with ovens, but right next to a Papa Murphy's, and then just franchise those so that people can buy the pizza at Papa Murphy's, walk right next door to the oven laundromat. It's already preheated, ready to go. There's tables there. Anyways, I'm seeking venture capital right now.
That's amazing. A whole cottage industry based on uncooked pizzas. And the you know what? Let's just roll with it, because do you know how many finishers? There are so many, you know, pop stars that are finishers, people that saw a trend happening and just ran with it. There will be people, if you don't go the extra mile and finish it off, there will be those shops set up next to you, not doing the hard work, just baking the pizzas and making all the money, right? Like, it's true. You see that all the time. You know what I mean? Like these innovative artists that are just all obsessed with the idea, but they don't take it anywhere. They're industrious folks that'll show up and be like, thank you very much. I'll make that something that is palatable to people that they want to eat right now.
You see this on TikTok all the time where like there's a guy right now, and it's crazy. Like he's getting quote unquote canceled on TikTok because people found out that it's this white guy who's just taking other people's videos, predominantly people of color, and remaking them shot for shot, disgusting, not adding anything at all creatively, not yes-anding it, just remaking the video. And the guy has like 2.5 million followers. And it's crazy because there are all these people that are trying to cancel this guy. They're pointing out, look at him, he's just taking other people's ideas, and it doesn't matter. People are not unfollowing him. They're like, he's doing fine. And it sucks. That I hate that about the creative world, but there are people who will do that.
Yeah, screw that guy. That's messed up. if this wasn't a picture book podcast episode, I might have used more choice language. But yeah, okay, so that's baking it. Don't be a Papa Murphy's. Don't be a Lunchables. Let's move on. Is that all your points? That was point five, right? Okay.
That was point four. You have point five and six.
All right. You're correct. You've always been a better counter than me. So point five, it kind of plays on this. It's the deliver the pizza. You got to add the delivery as part of your functionality. And what this is really about is Ryan Appleton, who's my agent, you know this chap, he told me, I was talking about how it's my nature, just like you said with the Austin Kleon quote, when I've executed the project, it's dead to me. I'm like, all right, Next, bring out the next thing. And he said, it's as if you're the mama bird just kicking the creative project out the nest and just saying, fly or die, man. Let's just see. Let's see how it does. And I think that there's this thing for creative people that we really want to believe. I think it's something about the need of affirmation of knowing it was good or bad purely based on its own merit, right? Yeah. Like if it, but the truth is what I've learned over time is the things that grow organically, rapidly, quick enough for it to survive. Like if when you kick the thing, I'm rolling with a bird pizza analogy. You're gonna have to stick with me just for 1 second if anybody's losing track here. Like there's a time and space when that thing has to fly, right? Or it hits the ground and it's dead. And the same is true for every creative project. Right now, the reason we're pushing so much is pre-orders really matter to whether this thing takes off. And there are so many things that are out of our hands of whether that happens. But we're going to do everything we can to make sure we give it the best chance. And the thing is that it doesn't matter if it's a book or not. Like a lot of people say, you know, they open a coffee shop and be like, if the coffee is good, the word will spread on its own. And that's totally true. Word of mouth will spread quality things, but it might not spread it fast enough for you to have the budget to keep the lights on. There is a time and space. Yes.
Not only that, but also there's the fact that like, if the coffee's amazing, but it takes me 25 minutes to get to your location, I'm gonna go there 2 times a year. And I would rather just go, hey, you know what? I'll have this coffee that's 80% as good or 70 or 50% as good, but is on my way to work. Like, and it's, you kind of have to end up with this attitude of like, it's not really whether this is right or wrong or whether it's unfair or fair. This is the way that the world works. And so a bird that gets pushed out of a taller tree has a little bit more time before it hits the ground to learn how to fly. That's not fair or unfair. That just is the reality of the situation. A coffee shop that's in a better location is going to do better. And that's it, all other things being equal. And so, you know, if you're planning a coffee shop, you can bemoan the fact that, oh, it sucks that the good real estate is more expensive. Or you can just say like, these are the table stakes. This is what it costs to play this game. And so I'm going to do it this way. Andy and I didn't set up the fact that like, that pre-orders are super important to books. We don't particularly like that fact or dislike that fact. It just is what it is. And what we know is that the New York Times list, the Wall Street Journal list, all of those lists, your first week are overly important compared to every other week that this book will ever sell. The first week of sales, there's a bonus in it for you. And so we didn't set it up. We don't have feelings about it one way or the other, but we do know that this is how the game works. And because we are proud of this, you know, this is kind of what we're coming down to is like, because we made the thing that we want to make, we want to get it out to the most people that we can get it out to. And that means pushing it as hard as we can during this period and being unashamed about that and saying like, this is just what it is. This is what it takes to do the thing that we were trying to do.
And I think what's really interesting too is you want the judgment of the thing to determine whether it does well. But the fact of the matter is at some point you have to sell your movie to get it in theaters. Now, whether people come back for the next movie you make has a lot to do with the merit of the first one, but whether they go in first has to do with how well did you get it out there. And so you have to own that project. And the more that you believe in the project, the more willing you should be to do it justice with the promotion and getting it out there and delivering it and taking it, bringing it home. And so, you know, and the other thing is you said about the coffee shop thing. Yes, there are connoisseurs. There's a small slice of people that will drive extra to get that coffee, but they are not enough to build a business on. Yes, there are people that love picture books. They're crazy about picture books. They read every one that gets published by every publisher every year, and they find those gems, but those people are not enough to get it to be reprinted. to get it, to get publicity, to get it out in the world. And so I've just over time realized that you selling a terrible book will never work out in the long run. So you don't have to worry about, oh, did it just work because of sales? Selling, like we've seen this a million times, the startups that have the slickest brands and all the right venture capitalists, but nobody uses the product. Nobody, it doesn't actually mesh with consumer behavior and they end up going away. You don't have to worry about having no merit and winning in the long run. It will not work that way. Go bring it home. All right. Last one. Last one is enjoy every bite of the pizza. Okay. You know, for me personally, sometimes that last bite of the pizza, I'm really kind of distracted because I'm thinking, oh, I should have got different toppings, or, oh, I should have ate this more slowly. I'm regretting wolfing down that pizza and I'm not even enjoying the last bite as it enters my mouth because I'm thinking about all the other things that it could have been instead of enjoying what I had. And, you know, when I got the books, the big box of books for the advanced copies, I knew in my heart I could feel like you can open this box. This project means more to you than any other creative project you've made up to date. You can open this box like you've opened every other box of creative projects that are hit the finish line, like you have then, which is through a critical mind, as your future self thinking, oh, I would have done this differently. I would have been, you know, oh, I wish I would have all these different, I wish I would have picked different toppings, whatever. I wish I would have went for the thin crust, you know, the different paper stock, whatever it is, right? You can open it from the future use perspective, or you can stop and you can think, I'm going to enjoy this because, man, if Andy from 1993, who was a little kid, who was freaking obsessed with picture books that, you know, they'd read something in class and make their mom go out that day to go get that or scour the library and try to figure out how do you say John Sheska because nobody understands the book I'm looking for. Like, if I could have given that book to 1993 Andy and say, this is your book, man, you grow up to make one of those books, then I would be like, whoa, I wouldn't be like, why'd you pick this paper stock? That's a weird, by the way, the paper stock in the book is fantastic, but
it is great.
But, you know, I would think about what about Andy in 2007 that has no idea if he'll ever have a creative career. You'd be like, hey man, Justin, I don't know the math of that 14, 15 years, something like that. You're going to have this book. What if Andy at 2012, who's just starting to dream about having a picture book, a story book like this, if he could see it? And I tried to open the box that way. And the fact of the matter is, I really believe that when you finish a project and it lands in your hands, the temptation is to allow future Andy, future you, to open that thing. But I really believe to complete the cycle and complete the journey, you've got to celebrate some wins and you've got to enjoy the last bite.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day and we were talking about like all the stuff that I'm doing. I was like, yeah, I'm trying to do this to get the book out. And I'm doing this TikTok post and I'm emailing my list and you know, all this kind of stuff. And he could tell I was just like really stressed about like the final, you know, week of getting this thing out or whatever. And he just kind of goes like, hey man, I saw this tweet about your book. I think it was from Chronicle, the publisher. And it said available wherever books are sold. And he was like, do you realize like how crazy that is? He's like, available wherever books are sold. That's insane. And like, yeah, is this going to be in every bookstore? No, but it's available. All of them know how to get it. Like, and the idea, like nothing I've ever made has been able to, have I been able to say that about like available wherever books are sold. And he was like, you should just like for 1 second, let yourself be like, that's pretty freaking cool that this is available wherever books are sold. And so I 100% am with you. Like, I think that the tendency of a lot of creative people, at least I know that this is true of you and I, is that as soon as you see something, you do that. You go, oh, I would have done it this way. Or, oh, like, you know, you compare it even to the vision that you originally had for it, which is before you had to bring in budget constraints and publisher input and like market constraints, all of that stuff. When it was just this idea, you compare it to that and you're like, well, it's only 95% of what I thought it was going to be or whatever. Instead of just saying like, this is a real book. You know, I published a video. I recorded myself opening that because I knew this will be a big moment for anybody who's been on that journey. The moment that I got those books in from the publisher, the advanced copies, my author copies or whatever, and I lost it, man. I just started weeping because I was like, this is a real book that is going to be in real bookstores. Like, it finally hit me that kids are going to read this book, and there will be kids that hopefully 10, 15 years from now, when they're doing their whatever version of a podcast, their space brain podcast is happening 10 years from now, they're going to go, oh yeah, the thing that made me get into writing kids' books was I saw this book that I loved about pizza from Andy and Kyle. Like, that's going to happen. And it just, yeah, letting myself take that moment to enjoy that was so beneficial. And I'm 100% with you. You have to let yourself enjoy the thing that you made, or else you just get to this point where you're just chasing the next thing and chasing the next thing and chasing the next thing. And you're never realizing like, hey, I actually made some stuff. I should take a minute to celebrate that.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. And actually in the spirit of that, I just want to say this episode, recording this, has been a celebration of it. And I've gotten emotional and passionate and excited through the process of recording this. And I'm just super, super honored and feel privileged to have got to make this with you, man. So thanks for doing this. And I'm so pumped that we got to make a book like this together.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. I actually have a tattoo from the book, and it's like my most visible, prominent tattoo. It's like below my sleeve line on my arm. And every time I'm doing like TikTok lives or whatever, or Instagram lives, and I'm talking about the book, somebody will go, "Do you have a tattoo of your own book?" And I always say like, "Yeah, but I don't feel bad because I didn't draw this picture." Like, this tattoo isn't me going like, "Hey, look at this. This is from a book I made." What it is like, this is from a book I made with my friend Andy. And what this tattoo is about like that. It's about that me and my friend made the thing that we wanted to make, and we put it out into the world to try to inspire kids that are like the kids that we were. And so that's why I'm so stoked about this tattoo and this book. And so, yeah, man, I hope this is the first of a million books that we make together. And I'm super, super proud to have this be my debut.
Hey, thanks, Kyle, for coming on the show, and thanks for all of you who have already bought the book. We're getting some good traction. We're hitting some lists, some top lists on Amazon, and we've had some really good reviews come in, and there's some positive momentum, but we still need a lot to get it where we needed it to be to make a serious dent in the picture book world, in the pre-orders, to get it to kind of catch on and get on lists and get some press and all that kind of stuff. So if you would please help us and support the work that I do, go to creativepeptalk.com/pizza. There's some links there of where you can buy the book. And I hope you don't mind me pulling in some favors. I try my best to show up every single week with just tons and tons of stuff to give and share, and share all the things that have helped me, because I love creative people. I love when creative people are winning. I love our world getting more creative and more friendly for creative people thriving. But I just so believe in this project. It means so much to me. And I want to model what I really believe is good practice for creators, is when you make something that you believe in and that you love, owe it to that project to do it justice and do everything you can to get it out there in the world, and ask the people who want to support you to support and show them how and tell them when. And, you know, don't bug them all the time with things that don't matter, but when something really matters, don't be afraid to ask. And so that's what I'm doing here. Would love your support on this. Thank you so much for everybody who has already showed up. We see you. Super appreciate it. CreativePepTalk.com/pizza to get your copy or copies for the kids in your life. Woo! This was a good episode. Creative Pep Talk is part of the Koloop Podcast Network. Koloop is a network of creative podcasts designed to fuel your creativity. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Shout out to Alex Sugg for our Creative Pep Talk soundtrack. Thanks to Sophie Pizza and Ryan Appleton for content assistance. Massive thanks to Jordan Aaron for editing the show so beautifully. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Until we speak again, stay pepped up. Stay pepped up. You must stay pepped up. Stay pepped up, for the love of God.